Today's programming is made possible in part by the advocates of Minnesota Public Radio. Contributors include the Dayton Hudson Foundation, on behalf of Dayton's, Mervyn's, and Target stores for arts and cultural programming, and General Mills Foundation. Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. A compromise proposal to manage the gray wolf population is getting harsh negative reactions from both advocates for the wolf and advocates for livestock farming. The proposal, released by the DNR this week, follows in the wake of last year's management plan, created by a citizen roundtable, but floundered in the legislature. DNR officials hope that this proposal will fare better, but concede that the matter may, in the end, be decided in court. We'll take a look at the plan today and hear from critics so that you can make up your own mind. We'll start out by talking to Mike DonCarlos. He's Wolf Management Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. He joins us today in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Well, thank you, Catherine.
Now, let's go over the plan briefly. It looks basically like you're trying to strike a balance between those who want to ensure that the wolf population continues and those who say that that very population is a threat to their livelihoods.
Yes, we are. That's one key point. There are multiple issues that we're trying to address and other ones as well in this plan. As you said, last year's roundtable agreement didn't fare well in the legislature. The legislature has very different bills on the table. You know, what we've tried to do is look at those legislative concerns and put them together in a little bit different package that perhaps will better meet the needs of getting through the federal delisting process and court challenges.
Now, if I understand this new plan, it establishes it sort of splits the state into two, and you take the northeastern corner. That's the wolf zone, and the rest of us is the agricultural zone?
That's right. What we've done is proposed a two-zone system in Minnesota, a gray wolf zone and an agriculture zone. In the gray wolf zone, which is exactly the same as the federal recovery zones 1 through 4.
Oh, got to stop you right there. Federal recovery zone. In other words, the federal government has said, this is wolf land.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. The state gray wolf zone would include the entire part of Minnesota that was managed for recovery of wolves.
Okay.
The agriculture zone is outside of that. And in a nutshell, in the gray wolf zone, where conflict occurs with agriculture, the benefit of the doubt is going to go somewhat to the wolf. And in the agriculture zone, where those same conflicts occur, the benefit of the doubt will go a little more to agriculture.
How is this different from the plan that those citizens on that citizen roundtable put in a lot of time? How is this plan different from the roundtable plan?
Well, overall, I think it's far more comparable and similar than it is different. For example, the management that we're proposing in the gray wolf zone is virtually identical to the last version of the roundtable bill before it failed in the Senate, and that will apply to 100% of the recovery zone in Minnesota, the new gray wolf zone, and that is about 90% of the entire wolf range as it exists right now in the state. So 90% of the wolf in Minnesota will essentially be managed under the roundtable agreement.
If you were trying to come up with a summary for someone maybe who's just driven into Minnesota, has never had any acquaintance with this controversy, would it be fair to say that the roundtable proposal was this compromise that was hammered together by wolf advocates and by hunters and also by ranchers? And that it was when it hit the legislature that it was then decided there isn't enough protection here for ranchers and farmers, that it hit a few key legislators, and that's when things blew up?
I'd say that's roughly accurate, although I would have to point out there were already some roundtable members who were having second thoughts, shall we say.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's good to know. And so what's happened now with this other compromise, even though it has a lot in common, people are so frustrated and apprehensive from this process that they've said, well, we tried once, forget it, now we're going to go to court?
I think that there's a very strong value clash. The people literally have very different belief systems about wolves, and that's what makes this issue so difficult to resolve.
Okay, and so The key distinctions between old and new compromise plans?
Key distinctions are is that we have focused that high level of protection in the roundtable agreement into the core wolf range in the state and relaxed some restrictions outside of it. This bill will still, we're absolutely convinced, it will ensure the long-term survival of the wolf in Minnesota as a population. And it's important to distinguish that. There are some people who are very concerned about the welfare of every individual wolf, and this plan will negatively impact the welfare of some individual wolves, but not the population.
Boy, that's a beautiful way to say that. You know, in other words, they'll be killed. Negatively impact the population of some individual wolves.
You're right. They'll be killed. Yeah. You know, in the agricultural zone, by giving the benefit of the doubt to agriculture, that does mean that on occasion some wolves who may not have been causing trouble may be killed. And that and that's very contentious with some folks. But at the same time, the wolf population in Minnesota is extremely well protected by this bill.
And let's talk about trapping and hunting. That's always controversial. There will be a moratorium on certain kinds of hunting for a while, but there will be some trapping that's allowed.
This bill proposes a 5-year moratorium on public hunting and trapping seasons like we manage for many other species of wildlife. But it also empowers the commissioner of DNR to establish public hunting and trapping seasons after that period of time. So it's a little different than the legislation last year.
Okay. And this notion that there would be designated trappers, that wouldn't happen for another 5 years?
No, that would happen immediately on implementation. We're already trapping wolves in Minnesota right now. The USDA Wildlife Services Program is trapping problem wolves. And this legislation basically creates the opportunity for the state to develop a cooperative agreement with the federal trapping program and expand it using some state trappers.
Maybe we also need to go back and just sort of review why this plan is necessary in the first place. The wolf is on the federal endangered species list. It has now shot past any goal that the federal government had in terms of the population, reaching a stable point.
Right.
But the state can't take control from the federal government over how this population is managed until we have a grade A approved, everyone happy with the plan.
Right. There are two general things that need to happen under the Federal Endangered Species Act for a species that's listed. The first is that recovery has to be accomplished. And there's widespread agreement between the Fish and Wildlife Service and various state agencies that has happened. And all recovery requirements were met in 1999. But the second thing that needs to happen is the service needs to sort of evaluate the future before they decide to remove a species from the list. They need to ensure that there isn't going to be a relapse. They need to make a judgment about the future. It will be difficult for the service to make a judgment about the future of the wolf in Minnesota unless or until Minnesota has a legally mandated management plan. So even though the plan can't be implemented until that federal process is done, the federal process is stalled out right now until the state makes decisions about how it will manage wolves.
What sort of numbers are we talking about? I mean, how do you do a census of wolves?
Well, we do a couple of things. We do population surveys every year, and we get trend information. And what that means is the data will tell us whether numbers are increasing or decreasing, but won't tell us much more than that. For wolves, at about 10-year intervals, we've done a comprehensive statewide survey that is good enough that we can estimate actual numbers. And that survey was last done in 97-98, and we estimated the wolf population at 2,445 at that time. In the 2 years since then, the trend indicators suggested a slight decline in 98, but then an immediate upswing in the last survey in 99.
We're talking to Mike DonCarlos. He's a wolf management coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about a compromise proposal put out by the DNR to manage the gray wolf population here in Minnesota. It's getting some pretty harsh negative reaction from both advocates for the wolf and advocates for livestock farming and ranching. We'd like to hear your reaction. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We're going to turn now to Carlin Berg. She's a wolf consultant for the Humane Society of the United States. She's a member of the Coalition to Protect Predators. Carlin Berg, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, tell me what your criticisms are of this proposal.
Well, first of all, it's hardly a compromise. I did serve on the round table, and frankly, in this short period of time, it would be hard to compare how this recent plan varies critically from the round table agreement, which was also extremely generous, and we were and that was a pretty tenuous agreement. That agreement failed, and this plan basically that is now being proposed by the DNR is extremely irresponsible and is definitely a killing plan. For them to even suggest they've got two zones, one that provides some kind of protection for wolves versus a second zone, is absurd.
Carlin Berg, why is that?
Well, first of all, if you really, people really need to read this stuff closely and not accept all this duplicity as fact, because in reality what we've got is in one zone, the agriculture zone, landowners can kill wolves at their discretion. And I would like to remind the public that is exactly how the wolf became endangered in every state in this country in the past history. So that is extremely threatening to the animal. And then in the supposedly gray wolf zone, well, if you noticed, they mentioned that, well, some benefit of the doubt would be given to the wolf, well, in most cases. The language of this bill is so vague and so irresponsible, we plan to definitely go to the federal level to show that this is not an acceptable plan and that the state of Minnesota has yet to come up with something that really provides the proper management that the nation expects.
Now, when you say you're prepared to go to the federal level, does that mean you'll take it to court?
Oh, absolutely, because the thing is that the federal government needs to, I mean, basically the whole idea of putting an animal on an endangered species list is to try to bring it back to a recovery level. Now, when you get to that recovery level, and if we accept the estimates that we're getting, because I remind you that the estimates and the counting survey is extremely extrapolated and vague as well. But
so you're saying that we don't really know how many wolves we have?
Absolutely not. And any scientist will tell you that this is not a census. The word census would be a real misuse of the term.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the word scientist, because my understanding is that wolf expert Dave Miesch has signed on to this proposal. So what do you make of that support?
Well, that's not a surprise, because he's been signed on to a hunting sport trapping program since 1971. And I don't know where anyone ever got the idea that he did not support the taking of wolves, as he always has. That's just nothing new. And in fact, there are scientists in the federal government that say if the wolf is delisted, you can pretty well expect that it will be on the decline, because we do not have, in any of our states where wolves are either being recovered or reintroduced, really a responsible mentality towards them. They constantly quote people like Aldo Leopold that, oh, we ought to be thinking like a mountain. But in fact, the idea is that when the wolf gets delisted, at that roundtable, almost every meeting dealt with how can we kill them, when can we kill them, how many can we kill. There was nothing, and there still is nothing in the plan that provides for the benefit of the wolf. And frankly, if wolf gets delisted, the federal government should be turning over the torch, saying, gee, we've managed to pull this animal to a higher level, and now we can turn it over to you. But that doesn't mean the state can suddenly say, yahoo, now we can kill them all. And that's exactly what we've had in the state legislature.
Carlin Berg, I need to ask you why you fear destruction of the wolf in the so-called agricultural zone, when in fact that's a part of the state where the federal government never intended the wolf to flourish.
Well, that was always an arbitrary decision, because they never figured that it might be there. And even the original recovery goal figures are arbitrary figures based on what they felt at the time. What we do know is, I would like to make it very clear that the environmental groups that I work with and our coalition have in all of our position statements said that when there is truly a verified depredating wolf, that wolf should probably be removed. We're not saying, as they would like to claim we're saying, is that all individual animals should always be saved. What we're saying is that we know there are some ranchers who have legitimate problems, and the present program that targets depredating wolves is the most efficient way to remove those animals. And once you get into this agriculture zone that, you know, you're speaking about here, is that is probably the case. But
Carlin Berg, I have to interject here and point out that a little later in the program, when we hear from someone from the other end of the spectrum, they're going to say, thank you very much for that kind thought, but it is so hard to prove. You know, it isn't like a wolf necessarily leaves evidence in a calling card,
but
this isn't going to be helping me.
Yes, Well, they certainly do. And when you look at the range that the wolf exists, there are over 8,000 to 12,000 farms with a couple hundred thousands of cows and sheep and everything else. And when, if you look at the statistics, you'll see exactly how low the actual livestock depredations are. When I've been researching animal damage control throughout the world, going from Alberta to even European countries, the bottom line is good husbandry, preventative action is your best defense against a livestock depredation by predators, including the wolf. And so we expect that there ought to be best management practices and good husbandry in place. And a lot of these people are unwilling to do it. And in fact, that's exactly what made all the large carnivores and predators throughout the world endangered. It's just that kind of wanton behavior and interpretation of killing predators. And it's really time that we enter the year 2000 and we enter this next millennium with applying some of the science and knowledge we know about these animals and apply that.
Carlin Berg, I need to keep us moving along here. I'm so sorry. But very quickly, as a final question, you really think that in court, federal court, you're going to get a plan that's more to your liking?
Oh, no, it's not a matter of getting a plan. What it's a matter of is basically saying that you cannot delist the wolf until the state has provided a plan that is not only acceptable, but is not so irresponsible as this plan. And, in fact, they would be responsible for this species. And we need to see that they're going to be able to do that. If they cannot, if this is the best, and matter of fact, it was mentioned at the meeting the other day, they felt that this was the best that they could get past the legislature. That is not exactly the way to go. What you do is you provide a plan that is best for the species' long-term survival, and this plan does not represent any of that.
All right, Carolyn Berg, I have to say goodbye.
Thank you very much.
I thank you for joining us. Carolyn Berg, Wolf Consultant for the Humane Society of the United States, and a member of the Coalition to Protect Predators, a new group of more than a dozen state and national organizations that oppose the DNR's wolf management plan. Now, Mike DonCarlos from the DNR, quick response here before we go to calls.
I'll be brief. I'll touch on 2 points. The notion that somehow that livestock owners have caused the endangerment of wolves is ridiculous. What caused the extirpation of wolves in the 47 states and a severe reduction in Minnesota was a combination of poisoning, aerial gunning, and bounties. All three of those are illegal in Minnesota. They are never coming back. That's what caused the decline. The removal of problem wolves by agriculture did not do it.
Right.
Secondly, the survey methodology we've used is widely accepted within the scientific community, and I would point out that the same methodology determined the numbers that were used to list the species in the first place. I find it interesting that those methodologies were acceptable then, but not now.
We're going to go to Dick in Osseo. Dick, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
First, I wanted to thank everybody that worked in that roundtable. I know how many hours they put in on it. I wasn't involved in it myself, but I've kept close track of it. I wanted to point out that in spite of the claims of the representative from the Humane Society of the United States, that organization is probably the largest anti-hunting, anti-trapping, anti-fishing, anti-animal experiments, anti-pet organization in the United States. And all you have to do is go to the statements of their officers to prove that and their bylaws. And in my humble opinion, it would be doubtful that any plan that involved the taking of wolves is going to be acceptable to them and would probably be taken to court.
Okay. Thanks, Dick.
Thank you.
We're going to go to Trish in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yeah. Good morning.
Hi.
I have two children, small children, so never mind them in the background.
Oh, that's okay.
I guess my question is why would the DNR and whoever else decide to use trapping as a means of management and to continue to allow that? I guess to me, I can see where the wolf might need to be taken in different cases or killed. But couldn't that be done more humanely than using trapping in any circumstances? And isn't there a way we can do away with trapping altogether?
Well, trapping remains the most effective way to capture wolves. They're very secretive. It's very difficult to try to shoot a wolf in a damaged situation. Trapping is effective. The traps that are used commonly by wolf research biologists. They restrain the wolf with minimal damage to the wolf. They're used to repeatedly live capture and release animals. So the notion that trapping is somehow causing serious harm to wolves really isn't true.
In the agricultural zone that the DNR has sketched out, How exactly do you control the hunting and killing of wolves? I mean, this notion that if a wolf threatens your pet, well, I'm walking Fido and I see a wolf, I feel pretty threatened.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it's designed to do. It's designed to let citizens make decisions about their safety and about the welfare of their animals in that zone. As I said earlier, it's giving the benefit of the doubt to people who live with wolves to make those decisions.
But is there an alternative? I mean, are there other ways to make sure that wolves stay out of certain areas? Is there like a number that if so many wolves are killed within a year in the agricultural zone, you guys say, whoa, maybe we need to rethink this?
Well, in this bill, we will have good records and we'll monitor the number of wolves taken, so we'll know that.
But there's no cap.
There's no cap, and the reason there's no cap is because the expectation is the numbers would never get to the level that would be necessary to cause a population reduction. And I would like to add to that, we have probably several hundred wolves right now in residence in the agricultural zone. All of the biological experts do not expect these more liberal provisions for citizens to take wolves to eliminate or even significantly reduce the number of wolves that are in that zone.
Now, my understanding is that wolves reproduce at a very high exponential rate?
Yes, a very high rate.
And so that's why you're thinking that even, well, that's why you're thinking that, that even with the condoning of killing, of taking of wolves in the agricultural zone, because they're reproducing so quickly, it's not going to have that adverse an effect.
Right. Wolves are subject to many types of mortality, and if a few more wolves are killed by one way, there's compensation reduction in other mortality rates, and they have a very high reproductive potential to fill back in.
We're going to go to Stephanie in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Well, hello, Catherine. You said that probably no one was on in agreement with the new issue, and I may be your only caller who's firmly on both sides of the issue.
Well, how did you manage that, Stephanie?
Well, I think that, you know, I absolutely love wolves, and there's no one more than me who loves running alongside the outside of the fence at Como Zoo while the wolves run along the inside of the fence with you. They're imprinted on humans. But I'm also fully aware that a wolf is a formidable predator, and if I were a rancher, wolves will do things like not finish killing a lamb before they start to eat it, and not only financially, but emotionally, I'm sure that's very hard to take. The other thing, I agree with your previous caller about the Humane Society of the United States. They initially sound logical, but when you look at their literature and their stands, they don't seem to have an appreciation of the fact that if you're going to protect wildlife, you have to enlist the people who live with the wildlife, like the ranchers and farmers. And they are absolutely dead set against anything from research on down, which means that they, in a real way, value animals more than people. And I think that that is a bit radical, even for those of us who love animals. Also, Mike, Don Carlos might remember me. I'm Stephanie the Bat Lady, one of the zoo volunteers.
I remember you well, Stephanie. Hi.
Thanks for calling, Stephanie.
So, good vote of confidence. And again, Mike, if this is only 10% of the wolves that are not covered, I think you're right that anything, even if farmers or ranchers went crazy killing wolves, which I doubt they will do, they, I think, are much more aware of animals than we are. Surely the wolves in that borderline would be able to rebound their numbers.
We agree.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Stephanie. We are talking to Mike Don Carlos, Wolf Management Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about the compromise proposal put out by the DNR this week to manage the gray wolf population. It is receiving negative reviews from both ends of the wolf spectrum, advocates for the wolf and advocates for livestock ranchers. Of course, we want to know what you make of this controversy. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Shirley Idelson. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.
Thank you, Catherine. President Clinton heads to Illinois today to push the programs he outlined in his State of the Union speech last night. He's proposing $350 billion in tax cuts, more spending on education and health care, and making it tougher to buy handguns. The latest economic news is causing some jitters on Wall Street, where the Dow fell more than 100 points in the first few minutes of trading today. This after a government report showing a fast-moving economy and inflation picking up at a faster-than-expected rate. as his grandmothers continue their efforts in Washington today to send Elian Gonzalez back to Cuba. It appears he will not be going anywhere just yet. A federal judge in Florida has scheduled hearings in March on the dispute, so it's unlikely that Elian will be sent home before then. A powerful storm is moving across the southern tier of the nation, dumping more than a foot of snow in Arkansas and Mississippi. Alabama and Georgia and the Carolinas are in the storm's path. In regional news, Minnesota's Republican Party Chair Ron Ebensteiner was in Washington last night to hear President Clinton's State of the Union speech. Ebensteiner said he was pleased the president spoke of tax cuts, but he believes they should be broad-based rather than targeted to particular groups, as President Clinton proposed.
You know, with the surpluses that we're running, and I think that the American people are just overtaxed, we're sending too many tax dollars to the government, and I think those tax dollars could best be spent by families themselves as opposed to government.
Ebensteiner also says Clinton wants far too many new government programs. Lawmakers are looking for ways to get more for the money spent on housing prisoners in Minnesota. The cost of housing prisoners in the state is among the highest in the nation. But Senator Randy Kelly says despite the higher spending, Minnesota still has a high number of repeat offenders. The state forecast for today, mostly sunny, highs from the upper teens in the north to the middle 20s in the south. At this hour, it's mostly sunny and 3 degrees in Rochester. Duluth reports sunny and 8 degrees. And in the Twin Cities, it's mostly sunny and 6 degrees. And that's the news update. I'm Shirley Adelson.
Today's programming is made possible in part by the advocates of Minnesota Public Radio. Contributors include ADC Telecommunications and Deluxe Corporation Foundation, supporting communities like ours.
I'm Bob Edwards, National Public Radio. NPR News is probably as essential to your morning as that first cup of coffee, getting the children ready for school, or walking the dog. In fact, I'm sure the morning edition has become an important part of your life because you made the commitment to support it financially. Thank you for becoming an important part of our lives and the future of public radio.
Show your love of Minnesota Public Radio by becoming a member or renewing your membership. Call 1-800-227-2811. I'm Catherine Lanfrey. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Mike DonCarlos, Wolf Management Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about the DNR compromise proposal to manage the gray wolf management population. Perhaps the best quote we've heard connected with this controversy came from Assistant Commissioner Steve Morris, who said, "No one likes it. That's the beauty of it." Well, we'd like to hear what you think of this proposal. 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. That is a great quote, Mike DonCarlos.
It is, and it's true.
So tell me, since no one likes it, and that means that makes it a good compromise, but does that mean it'll get through the legislature?
I don't know at this point, but we hope that it does, because we will not make progress through the federal delisting and court challenges until the legislature takes action. If they don't, we will lose another year in this process.
We're going to go to Marty. He's calling us from northern Wisconsin. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be thinking about that quote all day. That's pretty amazing. Here in Wisconsin, we're also looking at how to remanage, how to update our wolf management plan. And I attended a hearing last year on just that subject, and there are a lot of livestock people in the audience who were getting up and talking about the necessity to kill wolves when they're threatening their livestock. And I never heard a single rancher get up and say, "I'm willing to do these things to protect my livestock, to keep the wolves from coming in and depriving my property." Why do they get off scot-free, and the wolves are going to be the ones to suffer? In other words, if this was a disease, if we looked at wolves as being, say, something like the mad cow disease, livestock owners would be doing everything they possibly could to vaccinate their animals against that disease. Why are they being allowed to not put any protection out there, whether it be guard dogs? Guard dogs have proven very effective in keeping wolves away from livestock. Fencing, whatever it takes, not allowing their cows to go out and calve in the woods where they're going to be very susceptible to wolf deprivation. Can you explain that?
Well, Marty, I'll take a stab at it, but Janet McNally can certainly speak to this in more detail than I can. Simply put, in Minnesota, the non-lethal preventative methods are either not effective enough or are too expensive. You mentioned fencing. Wolf-proof fencing certainly can be done, but at just extraordinary cost for individual growers, and those same fences would also prevent all other wildlife from entering that property. Guard dogs have been somewhat effective, but not consistently, and it's pretty clear that if you have livestock and wolf range in Minnesota, you are vulnerable to problems, even if you do everything right.
Well, but have we necessarily fully explored all these options? I mean, is there a sort of dog that we could raise? I mean, do we need to look more at the training of dogs? Should there be a state subsidy for some of this fencing? Hey, it's the 21st century. Can we design a better fence?
Certainly we can. The issue is not technical, it's economic.
And so then my question would go back again to, is there some sort of state subsidy that we should be looking at?
Well, that's for the legislature to decide and consider.
We're going to go now to Janet McNally. She's a representative of the Lamb and Wool Producers Association. She's a sheep and beef producer in Hinckley, Minnesota. Welcome to Mid-Morning, Janet.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me. I would like to directly respond to the last caller. Myself, I do use, we currently have 5 livestock guarding dogs here. We've been using them since 1982. Until the wolf arrived here, they were 100% successful. Since we've had wolves, which began in 1991, we've had very significant losses despite using the guard dogs. And our sheep are also contained inside a 5-strand high-tensile electrified fence that's considered predator-resistant. We've found that when predators are hungry, they'll find ways around all of these methods. And the biggest problem, as was pointed out, is just simply the cost.
Let's get back to the compromise management plan.
Okay.
Tell me what your main criticism is.
Okay, well, the biggest problem we have is the concept of Zone 4. I feel that
I got to stop you right there. Zone 4. I mean, are you talking the agricultural zone versus the wolf zone?
Right, right. I think the DNR made significant progress when they established a agricultural zone that permits farmers to control wolves that are presenting a threat to livestock. But they did in the process declare a Zone 4 that actually, in essence, puts 36% of the state in as a wolf refuge where no control other than after-the-fact depredation control is allowed. And
You'd like to see the wolf zone be smaller?
There already are enough wolves within zones 1, 2, and 3, which were not mentioned in the plan, but these are zones that have been included in former wolf recovery plans.
Okay, so I'm thinking of the person who is not as intimately involved with this plan as you are. Okay.
Well, these
in other words, what we're saying is you think that they have made the wolf zone as big as they possibly can, and you'd like to see it shrink.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
And tell me this, how much livestock is actually lost? Are there any numbers out there on what kind of problem this is for ranchers and farmers in Minnesota? When you say that you've lost a sheep, that's... I mean, how many sheep do you think you'd lose before wolves? How many sheep do you lose with wolves? Can you give people who aren't as intimate with this controversy some idea?
The problem isn't the overall loss to the whole industry in Minnesota. You know, when you total up the number of cattle in the state and the number of cattle verified lost to wolves, it does not appear to be a very significant number. But to individual producers, the problem is large enough to put them out of business.
How many people have gone out of business?
Well, we've lost over 90% of the sheep producers in the wolf range, that zone 4, are now out of business because of the wolf.
And there were how many?
Well, we used to have over 12,000 producers within that zone, and now there's actually only a little over 3,000 producers in the entire state, and most of those are located outside of the wolf zone at this point in time. There was a time when that area was considered a very good pasture area and held a lot of sheep producers.
Would compensation help? Is that maybe an alternative to look at?
The problem with compensation programs and with the depredation control program is all in verification of losses.
How do you verify that a wolf is the one who attacked your sheep?
Well, presently what we need to do is be able to find a carcass within basically 1 or 2 days of when it was killed. And with small livestock like sheep, the problem is the wolves can consume everything, so there's nothing to find. And a really good example that drives that home is last year we lost 75 young lambs to predators, both coyote and we believe there was wolf involved as well. Out of those 75 lambs, we were only able to find 3 lambs that provided sufficient evidence to determine what the cause of death was.
So you assume it's predators because they simply disappear? There's no other evidence?
Because they vanish out of the pasture. If the lamb dies to any other cause, it's going to be within the fence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if in fact, most of the time, if a lamb is sick and diseased, you've been watching it, treating it, and when those animals die, they almost always die right in the bedding area where they lay down to sleep for the night.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about lambs that vanish outside of sometimes some pretty small pastures, like only 3 acres in size, where you can actually walk every inch of the pasture, and the lamb clearly has disappeared.
Tell me, is there poaching of wolves that goes on now?
There's certainly the attitude that we hear from producers that say, if they don't give us the right to control depredation, then we'll just take care of the problem ourselves. Whether there's specific incidences, I don't know of any, but certainly people are getting more and more angry, and we're talking about messing around with their livelihood, and people are going to protect their livelihood, and if we're not provided a legal way to do it, you're going to see people do it illegally, yes.
And what was wrong with the roundtable plan?
The biggest problem with the roundtable plan is it didn't represent the state of Minnesota. We had a few professionals in there that were able to coerce and control the whole program, and it simply didn't represent what the majority of Minnesota wants in a wolf management plan.
And finally, what do you think will happen in the legislature, or will you too be taking this proposal to court?
I can't comment on what we'll be doing legally. As far as legislature, what I'm hoping for is some sensible moderation. We saw last year plans that went too extreme on both ends, and in the end never solved the problem. And I'm looking for some moderation.
All right. Janet McNally, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Janet McNally is a representative of the Lamb and Wool Producers Association. She's a sheep and beef producer in Hinckley, Minnesota. Mike Don Carlos, Wolf Management Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Any comments, any reactions?
No, I think Janet did a nice job of describing the livestock issues. What I would add to it is that it's the nature of the damage. It is very true that wolf depredation doesn't occur to most livestock producers in any given year. But it's one of those risk factors that when it happens to you, it's pretty bad.
We're going to go to William in Anoka. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I agree mostly with your guest, but I've lived in farm country my whole life, and I own a bunch of land myself.
William, you know what? We've got a lot of static here, so try to be very concise, okay?
Okay. I live in farm country, and I was just going to say, I agree with the new proposal somewhat, but if you have 1,000 people in a room,
William, I'm so sorry. The static is just too much. We're going to have to go to Judy in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess I'm bothered by the fact that the DNR put together this roundtable, and including farmers, and everybody agreed to this plan, and then the livestock owners went to the legislature and killed it, and now the DNR is loosening the plan to suit the livestock owners. That doesn't seem to be a very principled position to take to me. And how are you going to keep the public involved in issues like this if you do that sort of thing?
Well, let's turn to Mike Don Carlos.
Who's not principled? The department? Is that your comment?
Judy?
Well, I'm saying it doesn't seem to be very principled to put together a citizen panel, take recommendations, and then some of those citizens that agreed to it go to the legislature and break the deal, and now the DNR seems to be loosening the agreement to suit the people that broke the deal.
Sure. Let me recap what DNR did in wolf management. We convened a roundtable, we got broad representation, and we set some broad guidelines. And we told the roundtable that if you can come up with consensus recommendations within these biological guidelines, that we will carry those recommendations to the legislature. And that's exactly what we did last year. DNR testified in support of the roundtable agreement right to the bitter end. But the legislature had other ideas, and the House severely amended the bill and passed out a very different bill, and the Senate ultimately put it on the table and didn't pass it, although they had also amended it. So in effect, that roundtable agreement had been wholly and totally rejected by the legislature. You know, we have a responsibility to the citizens of Minnesota to stay engaged in this process, and we felt that it was responsible to then, okay, that didn't work. Now let's go try, you know, another approach.
I was going to say, Judy, so are you more have problems with the legislature, or do you think that the DNR should just keep coming back with the same plan?
Well, I think the DNR could have had a little bit stronger position that this was what all the citizens agreed to, and this is what we're sticking with. And
Judy, have you dealt with the legislature?
Somewhat.
Yeah, okay.
But still, the DNR, if they wouldn't support changing the plan, federal government might not support the legislature's plan either. I just think they could have taken a stronger position and supported the citizens that all agreed to these recommendations.
Judy, I thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Of course, you know, she does have a point in that. Looking at the outcome of this citizens' roundtable, do you think you'll be able to do others?
There's no question that, you know, that breach of process that occurred is going to make it difficult. Roundtable members worked very hard to reach this agreement with an expectation that the legislature would generally accept it. And that didn't happen, and that's unfortunate.
We're talking to Mike DonCarlos, Wolf Management Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about the DNR Compromise Management Plan for the gray wolf population. We'd like to hear your observation of this compromise. 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We're going now to Ginny Yingling from the Minnesota Sierra Club. She has called up. Thanks for joining us. Oh, sorry about that, Ginny. I guess I have to push you on, don't I? There we go. Hi, Ginny.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Ginny.
I just wanted to touch on a couple of things, because this is this...
And Ginny Yingling, I think we should make it clear. Oh. I believe you were on the roundtable, were you not?
That's right. I was on the roundtable. I was also at the meeting just yesterday or the day before where the plan was unveiled. And we were being told that this plan is essentially the same as the roundtable agreement, that we've got more benefit for the doubt for the wolf in the wolf zone and benefit of the doubt for the farmers in the farm zone. And I think we need to look at that just a little bit more closely, because this is an incredibly vague plan. What it says in the ag zone is that a farmer or a landowner can take a wolf if to protect their property. And property isn't defined in the bill. And the methods of taking wolves isn't defined. And when pressed on that issue, we couldn't get an answer from the commissioner on what the limits on that were going to be. Did it mean that if you saw a wolf, you could shoot it, or did it mean that you could proactively go out and hunt and trap every single wolf on your property just because they're there, with no real sense that there was, or no evidence that they were really going to be of any kind of threat? And then in the wolf zone, it isn't a big protection zone for the wolf. There's still language in there that we had agreed to on the roundtable of, if a farmer or a pet owner sees that a wolf is presenting an immediate threat, either chasing, attacking, or killing an animal, then they can, and now the language says take. Last year it said shoot, now it says take that wolf. And so what we're talking about is a very broad opportunity for people to kill wolves on top of the already 150 to 200 wolves killed every year by the Animal Damage Control Program. So We aren't talking about an insignificant approach. We're talking about a very vague and uncontrolled approach to wolf management. And we're told, well, this is protecting 90% of the wolves because 90% of them fall within the wolf zone. But the minute that the agricultural interests at the meeting this week raised objections and said, well, most of the wolf attacks on livestock are in that wolf zone, the DNR commissioner immediately said, oh, yeah, well, we will probably have to revisit where that line is drawn, meaning that we won't at some point have 90% of the wolves in that wolf zone. So there's so many questions about what the real intent is here.
Okay.
So many questions about, are we going to be able to control what's happening? This is not the way that we manage wildlife. We have spent a generation developing wildlife management policies that say we will set controls on how we take wildlife. We don't let the property owner simply decide when wildlife will be taken or how much wildlife will be taken.
Ginny, I want to give Mike DonCarlos a chance to respond here.
Well, there were multiple comments made here, and I'll try to respond to a few of them. Wildlife management has always been fluid. It changes. It changes as circumstances changes. So when the commissioner tells you that there might be further changes, that's because he's being very honest and straightforward. We constantly change our wildlife management laws, both in the legislature and by rule, to reflect changes that are going on in the land. I think that we need to distinguish here whether we're concerned about the protection of individual wolves versus threats to the population. I'll reiterate, DNR experts and other experts are quite convinced that this plan will fully ensure the survival of the wolf population in Minnesota and will maintain the existing distribution of wolves in Minnesota. It is true that by giving the benefit of the doubt to agriculture, that there will be some number of more individual wolves that will be killed under this plan, but the population will do just fine.
Ginny, a very quick response, and then we need to move to other calls.
Well, I think that it's, one, inappropriate to say that we're concerned only about individual wolves. We have always supported the Animal Damage Control Program, but, you know, we were told that wolves reproduce at an extremely high rate. Well, the rate is actually 3 to 5% a year, and the Animal Damage Control Program is already taking 5 to 10% a year. And when you talk about shifting these lines around, you can't tell us that for sure you are protecting the wolf population when you don't have a control on who is killing wolves, when, and how many.
All right, thanks.
Go ahead. On the 3 to 5%, at the risk of sounding bureaucratic and getting tedious, I'd like to make a comment on that. The rate of increase of wolves in Minnesota is calculated against the entire range and the entire population. But throughout most of that range, because the population is saturated, there is no increase. Wolves are not increasing there. There is a much higher than 3 to 5% increase at the periphery of the range and in ag areas, and a much lower increase in the core wolf range. The 3 to 5% is a net increase.
We're going to go to Tom in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Where to begin? There's one of the comments that the Sierra Club member raised that hasn't really been responded to. I mean, it seems that every agriculture and every livestock person you've had on here has been saying we're going to kill wolves, we're going to kill wolves in order to protect our land and our interests. How does the new proposal differ from what would be effectively a shoot-to-kill policy? I mean, you say if it presents a threat, you may kill it, and they say if it comes from my property, it's presenting a threat. It would seem that if overall statewide wolf depredation is fairly low and it's just individual cases, the way to address that is just the same as with any kind of thing that's statistically rare. You take out insurance. I mean, why can't there be a wolf insurance program? Small contributions to cover losses statewide. That would seem a better policy than shoot to kill.
Mike DonCarlos?
Well, we covered this issue in the roundtable, and as I recall, insurance is not generally available and not available, again, it's economics, in an economical fashion.
So could there be a state insurance fund? Could there be something like that?
That would be a legislative issue.
We're going to go to Bill in St. Cloud. Welcome to Mid-Morning, Bill.
Good morning. Just a comment in support of the new plan. I live actually in the Mille Lacs Lake area, and the wolf population has rebounded very heartily throughout the state. In fact, I know farmers in the Elk River area, and wolves are even approaching the northern ring of the metro area. And so the population has really rebounded, and there is I just feel there should be more support for the farmers and livestock producers because there is a real problem with wolves chasing even pets in those areas, and I know of several cases even of that happening. So I think it's it's a good idea that the wolf population has really rebounded a lot more than people in the Twin Cities may be aware of, because it is approaching the northern ring.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
All right.
We're going to go to Dory in Burnsville. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
I'm Dory Burnsville. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday I read in the Pioneer Press that the wolf controllers would be recruited from the state's current pool of trappers and given training by the state. Well, most people agree trapping is cruel, whether it's your pet, you, or wolves, whatever. My suggestion is, instead of the trappers getting $100 for a wolf carcass, that the trappers pay $100 for the privilege of doing their trapping. Maybe they would think a little more about trapping.
So you want the trappers to pay the state for the privilege of trapping?
Mm-hmm. Rather than having the state pay them for the carcass, have them pay the state $100 if they enjoy the pleasure of the sport of trapping.
Okay, thanks, Dory. Well, Mike,
thank you.
Carlos?
Well, the goal here is not to provide a trapping opportunity for a wolf trapper. The goal here is to get an agricultural damage problem solved. And so we're not talking about a public trapping season in which we would have a license fee. We're talking about getting experts in a specific place at a specific time. And they need to meet our schedule and the landowner's schedule, not theirs. And so it's reversed here. In order to accomplish that, there needs to be compensation to the trapper.
We're going to go to Liz in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Just out of interest, I'm wondering, in comparison to wolf and coyote depredation, what the state management rules are for coyotes in Minnesota.
The coyote rules are different in that coyotes are not a protected species.
Right.
But in the agricultural damage arena, it's essentially the same. There's existing statutes on predator control that are used right now for coyotes. And what we're doing is we're making modifications for wolves, but we're dovetailing on that existing program.
Right. So is a farmer able to shoot a coyote at any time in Minnesota, or?
That's different than the predator control program. The predator control program is the state taking action in response to a loss.
Right. I'm just interested in what the current management practice, or the current ability of individual farmers to kill coyotes on their property.
Sure, Liz. Coyotes are unprotected under state law, so they can be taken at any time by anyone for any reason, except by the use of poison and artificial lights.
All right, we're down to our final minute here. Can you give me some sort of sketch of what we think is going to happen with this proposal?
I wish I could, Catherine.
Yeah.
This is the department's, you know, best offering at this point, given the history of the issue, the biology, the legal issues, and so on and so forth. We think this is a reasonable way to go. The governor's office needs to review this, and the legislature needs to decide if this is something they want to take up this session.
All right. And is it fair to say that this is a plan that you figured would hold up in court as well?
We think so.
All right. Mike DonCarlos, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mike DonCarlos, Wolf Management Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We also spoke with Carlin Berg, Wolf Consultant for the Humane Society of the United States, and with Janet McNally, a representative of the Lamb and Wool Producers Association. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio.
Today's programming is made possible in part by the advocates of Minnesota.